from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Today on Register Radio, we'll discuss same-sex attraction. Can you really pull away from it? Jeanette DeMello talks with Rylene Simpson, who lived with another woman for 25 years. She tells us why she turned her life around and how she did it. Also, we all know we're going to die someday, but then what? Dan Burke talks with Register columnist Jimmy Akin about our own salvation history and life's biggest question, where will you be for eternity? Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Rylene Simpson, is a member of Courage. This is an international apostolate of the Catholic Church, which ministers to persons with same-sex attractions and their family and friends. As a teenager, Rylene felt that same-sex attraction we're talking about. She then went on to live with another woman for 25 years before rejecting the lifestyle and discovering her Catholic faith.
Rylene, it's great to have you on Register Radio today. You were a part of a documentary produced by Courage, which is the church's apostolate that cares for persons with same-sex attractions. And that documentary is called The Desire of the Everlasting Hills. Can you describe the documentary for us?
Sure. Thank you, Jeanette. It's really good to be here. So the idea behind the documentary is that we all know that same-sex attraction or homosexuality is really the hot potato issue of our times. It's very difficult to talk about. And in the Courage ministry, we really felt that it had become too much of a polarized or politicized issue. And when you get too far away from the people who are involved, I think it makes it more antagonistic. So Father Cech had this idea to make a documentary about people's individual stories. I think the great thing about people's stories is they show the authentic human person, and I think it brings the discussion back to a more calm kind of level. The movie talks about three of us. Three of us actually are Dan, Paul, and myself. Our story, little snippets interwoven of the three of us, different parts of our lives. And it really tells our story about some of the experiences that we had when we lived the gay life and then our coming home to the Catholic faith.
Well, you know, it's so true that when we get this conversation gets too politicized, or when it becomes simply about propositions, you know, what you should believe and what such and such teaches or how you feel, we sort of lose the point. The point is that these are real people, people like yourself. These are people who have hearts and who have minds, who have desires and all of that. And so we have to really get in touch with these people and learn to love them, people who are like ourselves. So how did that happen in your own life?
Yes. So it's kind of a long story to cover today, but I think maybe the shortcut version is I was in a lesbian relationship for 25 years because of a lot of different circumstances, some of which ended up being financial. There was a lot of pressure on our relationship, and it ended after 25 years. When that ended, I was a little bit adrift, maybe kind of felt like I was coming out of a fog, and the one thing I realized out of it was that I had no intention of getting into another relationship with another woman. So through a series of events, I was put myself in therapy to figure out why I had never been able to feel happy. And my therapist, after a while, said to me, "Do you believe in God?" And that was the pivotal question for me. I had been denying the whole time I was in the gay life, and even before I had gotten in, all the way back into my teenager years, I had been denying God's existence. Wow. Called myself an atheist. Basically decided that God had been a construct that people had made up so that they had somebody to blame or somebody to give them hope when they were in hopeless situations, and that when I was living the high life, I didn't really have a need for God, so I didn't have to believe in him. But when she asked me that question, It was, because I was in a therapeutic situation, I had been made a decision to be totally, totally honest with myself. It stopped me in my tracks, and I basically said, yeah, I believe there's a God.
Wow.
And then from there, her advice was, if you think you're going to have good relationships, your primary relationship is with God. If you don't have a good relationship with God, you're not going to be able to have good relationships in life.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
What amazing advice. And just your vulnerability is truly amazing with this therapist, but also your vulnerability to tell this story in this film. I mean, how did you even come to be able to do that? Obviously, it was a long journey as a return to the Catholic Church. But just to have that vulnerability to tell your story, where does that come from, Raylene?
Well, Jeanette, when I was gay, I was totally out. My partner was a little bit older, maybe a half a generation or so older than I was, and she was kind of closeted when we first got together. But I was out there, and I dragged her kicking and screaming right out of the closet. Mm-hmm. And I said, people don't like gay people because they don't know any gay people. Hmm. And, if we're going to make this better for ourselves, people have to know that we're gay and that we are responsible citizens and that we vote and that we hold down jobs and all that stuff.
Right.
So that's kind of, lived very out to the extent that I would even bring it up into a job interview. You know, uh-huh. I'm gay, I'm a lesbian. Do you have any problem with that? So yeah. 25 years later or more, I come back to the Catholic faith. I'm very grateful to be back in the Catholic faith. I'm very grateful to be a member of Courage. And at that point, looking at my story, I feel like if I did that for myself when I was gay, how much more of an obligation do I have to be out about my Catholic faith and mm-hmm. the fact that I've left the gay life behind? I think I have a big obligation to God to at least be out yeah. about it.
Yeah, that's so great. Well, we appreciate that vulnerability.
Thank you.
Is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio speaking to Raylene Simpson, who is a member of Courage, who is a part of the film The Desire of the Everlasting Hills, which talks about three people who experienced same-sex attraction and how they came back or came to the Catholic Church to embrace the teachings of the Church and to live chaste and peaceful lives and embracing God's love. Now, that's really part of the message of The Desire of the Everlasting Hills is peace. And it was a long road, I think, to get to that peace. But what can you share with us about the peace you feel now?
Well, I tell you, I think that we have in ourselves this need for relationship and for community and for love.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have described it as this hole in our heart, a God-shaped hole in our heart. So when we're out there in the world and we're listening to the world's messages, we get the idea that we are going to achieve this love, relationship, peace, harmony, excitement, all the needs that you have, and we're going to achieve them through experiencing all that the world has to offer. And I think it's our culture right now neglects the fact that we really derive these things from a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that from the outside in our relationship, we certainly appeared to be very happy. In fact, mm-hmm. I would say we were the poster couple for stable, successful, happy, wealthy lesbian couple. You know, we spent a lot of money and we traveled and we did all kinds of exciting things. But you don't know what you don't know. And that's really the way I would say about peace, contentment, happiness, joy, is I didn't know what I was missing.
Okay.
Yeah, but now in the faith, having a relationship with God, seeing His hand in my life, looking back, I only get that retrospectively. Mm-hmm. I have an experience, I think, what the heck is going on? And then later, months later, sometimes years, decades, I can look back and say, oh, that was the hand of God. He was leading me in a particular direction.
Yeah.
But And he does. He's always beckoning us, and he's always drawing us to him.
You know, that's an interesting, there's an interesting juxtaposition there, because God is certainly always drawing us. He created us. He knows our hearts. He knows what we need. But yet there's something that you say in the film, which I think is very important. It is, you said, you design your life. We all design our lives. So what did you mean by that?
Yes. So the context of that is, I'm talking about my relationship with Margot, and we both had high-powered jobs in the software industry where we traveled. And so we really weren't together very much during the week. We would see each other on the weekends. I had a job that I traveled to Atlanta every week for 3 years. And so that was the context for the comment. But if you, no matter your circumstance, if you look at yourself and your life and you think you don't know what you want, really all you have to do is look at what you've got, and that's all you want at that point. Because we do design our lives. We arrange our lives. Certainly circumstances interfere. Things happen in life. God intervenes in our lives. But, you know, if you're sitting with a bunch of people at a bar every night and you find that you're not happy, then it's because you're not wanting enough to be someplace else. So we do design our lives. We make our choices. All of our choices have consequences, and all of those consequences and choices are interrelated, and you can't separate them. So when you start making better choices, you end up with better consequences.
You know, Raylene, I really enjoyed the film when I saw it. It's been a little while since I last saw it, but it's the kind of film that I've talked with people about, because it does, as you said, put a face on the idea or the topic of homosexuality, which has become so hot button. But it shows us we all struggle with something. And peace and God's love is for us all. And I just want to close the show by saying thank you for telling your story, for embracing God's love, and helping us to be able to embrace God's love too, and those who are in the same situation that you are in. So, Raylene, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Jeanette. And if I can just jump in and say, it can be viewed online at everlastinghills.org.
Absolutely. So everlastinghills.org, that's where you can view the documentary that was done by Courage and features Raylene's story.
Thank you so much, Jeanette.
When we return, we'll talk with Jimmy Akin about something really big. Where will you be for eternity? This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, Provider and Protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Jimmy Akin, is an internationally known author and speaker. As the senior apologist at Catholic Answers, Jimmy has had more than 20 years of experiencing defending and explaining the faith. Jimmy is a weekly guest on the program Catholic Answers Live, heard right here on EWTN Radio. Also, he's a regular contributor to Catholic Answers Magazine and a popular blogger and podcaster. His personal website is jimmyakin.com.
Jimmy Akin, it's great to have you with us on Register Radio. It's great to have you, frankly, as part of the National Catholic Register team, and you in particular have the gift of clarity, of bringing crystal clear thought and perspective out of sometimes what can be murky waters. And we're grateful to have you as part of the team. And then your latest book, The Drama of Salvation, where you tackle some of the most difficult territory theologically, in particular between Protestants and Catholics. I remember in my own conversion calling up the head of RCIA as I was coming in, and I gave in, if you will. I said, I believe the Church is the authentic authority in the magisterium of Christ, and I will submit. And I don't think I said that right, but I think you get it. The two areas that were still unclear to me was soteriology, which is the understanding of how it is that we're saved theologically, and the doctrines of Mary, which were very difficult for me to overcome. I was excited to see you coming out with this book because I knew that it would bring clarity. The one thing that is interesting to me in your approach that's unique, and it actually is part of why I became Catholic as well, and that is I began to better understand Catholicism when I realized that I couldn't use my dictionary to interpret Catholic terms, or I couldn't use a Protestant dictionary to interpret Catholic terms. And I see as a primary method here that you're seeking to avoid that same error, aren't you?
Yeah. First of all, thank you very much for having me on the show, and thank you for your very kind words. It's my honor to be part of the Register team and to engage in the type of apostolic outreach that the Register and the Catholic Answers are involved in. In the book, I am very much, as you say, concerned with not getting tangled up in word fights. That's something that St. Paul warns against. He says that, you know, people who are obsessed with quarreling about words, have a spiritual problem, and that listening to such quarrels only ruins the people who hear them. And so, as someone who came from a Protestant background and embraced the Catholic faith, I had to learn to translate, because I had a background theologically as a Protestant, I had to learn how to translate between the Catholic language of theology and Protestant languages of theology. And I realized in the process of learning how to do that, that at times the differences are just exactly the kind of quarrels about words that St. Paul warned against. Now, there are substantive differences, and it's important to be aware of that, and it's important to talk about those substantive differences, but we don't need to be tangled up and at odds against each other on quite a number of things that are just based on misunderstanding each other's language. And so that's something in the book that I'm very concerned to clear up and to help people avoid.
And in that sense, was your audience in writing this book our Protestant brothers and sisters who you're trying to draw into this dialogue once again in a healthier way, or who did you write this for?
I wrote it principally for Catholics who are wanting to understand the Church's teaching in this area, and especially Catholics who have encountered Protestants, which is basically all of them in this country. And then also for Protestants who were interested in understanding the Catholic point of view on this. So I can't say I wrote it for all Christians, because, you know, there are aspects of this that, you know, would be interesting and informative, say, to Eastern Orthodox. But the book really kind of revolves more along the Protestant-Catholic axis, and so it's written for those two groups.
So we've talked about the problem of language and allowing the person that you're dialoguing with essentially to use their own dictionary so that you understand their terms the way they mean them, which is just about really listening.
Yeah.
But I wonder your perspective, since you've studied this so much. Calvin, of course, John Calvin, one of the great reformers, was a priest. Martin Luther, of course,
Calvin was a lawyer, actually.
Was he not a priest?
No, he was. He may have had a minor ecclesiastical office, but he was. I forget that, but he wasn't an actual priest. Martin Luther was, though.
Okay, so but with respect to Calvin, of course, he had a pretty in-depth theological understanding. He had
yes.
a deep knowledge of the apostolic or the fathers of the Church and that sort of thing, which he quoted from extensively. Do you believe that they purposefully conflated this dialogue and caused a division that then echoed out of the Reformation, was made worse and worse? or how do you attribute this radical misunderstanding and talking past one another, as I think you've said?
Well, part of it is just a product of the fact that as movements grow through time, they develop their own internal vocabulary, and they're often unaware of that. So, like, you know, today, one of the phrases that you'll sometimes hear some of our Protestant friends use is, have you accepted Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior?
Right.
Well, if you look in the New Testament, that language isn't there. I mean, it talks about Jesus being Lord, it talks about Jesus being Savior, but it never says anything about, have you accepted him as your personal things?
Right.
That's language that developed much more recently. In fact, that language comes from the 19th century. Mm-hmm. But most Protestants today use it without thinking about it because it's just grown up over time in their community. And that's natural. Language changes over time. This is something linguists are well aware of. And so it would be natural in the 500 years since the Protestant Reformation that a certain language would grow up over time that's different than Catholic language, just as Catholic language has changed over time. And so unless you're in regular communication and learn how to learn each other's lingo, there's just going to be a natural linguistic drift, theologically speaking, over time. But also parts of it go directly back to the reformers themselves. The faith alone formula is one that was popularized by the Protestant reformers, and it's understood in different ways by different groups of Protestants today, but the slogan itself goes all the way back to the Protestant reformers in the early 1500s. And so, yeah, part of the difference in language and part of the difference in substance goes right back to the beginning of the Reformation.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio with Jimmy Akin, who's a writer for The Register, of course, and senior apologist for Catholic Answers, about his new book, The Drama of Salvation, which is a fantastic work. Jimmy, what would you say, aside from talking past one another and not allowing one another to define each other, the terms as they appear in our own works, what are the other errors made or the chief errors that you really wanted to wade through and get past in this evaluation of the doctrine of salvation?
One of them is the idea that's very common in many Protestant circles where salvation is conceived of as a once-for-all event that occurs right at the beginning of the Christian life. And that's presupposed by the question, have you been saved? Which our Protestant friends sometimes use as a kind of evangelistic entree to get a conversation started in which they can evangelize. And if you just say, have you been saved, that presupposes a yes or no answer that would envision salvation occurring all at once right at the beginning of the Christian life. And there are some passages in Scripture, like in Ephesians, where Paul talks about salvation in the past tense. He talks about, by grace you have been saved. But then in other passages, he says, work out your salvation, which would imply it's a present thing. And in some passages, he talks about it as a future thing, saying salvation is nearer now than it used to be. And so salvation, the way the Bible talks about it, isn't just a one-time thing. It has a past dimension and a present dimension and a future dimension. And so the biblical way of talking about salvation is deeper and richer than the kind of flattened version that we sometimes encounter in evangelization today. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. I also wanted to clear up some of the controversy regarding the faith alone formula, because although that formula is not used in Scripture except in one place where it's rejected, it nevertheless, as Pope Benedict pointed out, it can be understood in an Orthodox Catholic sense. And so we don't necessarily have to quarrel over that slogan. It depends on how you're using it. And I wanted to explore that and point out the ways in which we can understand the doctrine of salvation in common, even if there are differences on some points.
Real quickly, what do you think are the most common errors that Catholics make in communicating our understanding of salvation?
Well, one of the worst is connected with this faith alone thing, because sometimes Catholics will say, you believe in faith alone and we believe in faith and works.
Right.
And to a Protestant, that sounds like you have to do good works in order to come to God and be forgiven. And that is not at all the Church's teaching. you do not have to do good works in order to be forgiven. Forgiveness is something that comes to us by God's grace, and we don't earn it. So using that language is something that will mislead Protestant listeners about what the church teaches, and that's a big mistake.
So, Jimmy, where do we get a hold of this book, The Drama of Salvation?
If you want the print version, you can go to Catholic.com or Amazon.com or your local Catholic bookstore. If you would like to read it on your device or have your device read it to you, you can get the electronic version at Catholic.com or at Amazon.com.
Well, my prayer for this work that you've done is it'll be spread far and wide, and that you continue to be the great blessing you are to the church. Thanks for being with us, Jimmy.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
So many people have told us that the National Catholic Register is one of the few sources of information they trust. They've also said they wish they had known about the Register sooner.
The misinformation in society has led us all to make mistakes in life, mistakes that could have been prevented with a better perspective. At the intersection of faith and culture, the catechetical nature of the Register provides the information that Catholics need, especially if, like me, they were not well catechized or converts to the faith that didn't have the necessary resources to begin with.
Please donate to the Register now. Your donation helps us reach out and provide crucial, faithful content to more Catholics, getting their news from otherwise unreliable sources. To donate, go to ncregister.com and click the Donate tab, or mail your donation to the National Catholic Register, P.O. Box 100699, Irondale, Alabama, 35210. Donate today and change "I wish I had known" to "I know the truth."